What's up, everyone? Aaron Nagler here, Cheesehead TV, joined by Paul Brettel of Cheesehead TV and Dairyland Express. The man knows everything when it comes to Green Bay Packers and really everything Wisconsin sports, as evidenced by your zip up there, looking good in your Bucks and Six gear.
Yeah, I'm incredibly excited for tomorrow night's game, but I'm always happy to talk Packers with you, Aaron. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for making the time. You recently on Cheesehead TV had, I guess, a bit of a, you know, mind dump as far as everything you're thinking about heading into training camp. I just wanted to pick your brain about a few of the things you wrote about, because I was with you on a lot of it. The one thing that really caught my eye, though, was the players, the notable players that you expect to be cut. And you had both EQ Ekwemenius St. Brown and Devin Funchess on that list. And I kind of understand both of them in a vacuum, right? Mm-hmm. But how do you see it playing out where they both end up being cut?
So I'll start with last season. The Green Bay Packers only kept five receivers on the roster for the initial 53-man. And we already know that four of those spots are going to be taken. So along that line of thinking, and maybe they go six this year, we don't know. Maybe they only keep two quarterbacks instead of three. Jay Sternberger's out the first 2 weeks, so there's a potential roster spot open. So if they go six, and I'll get into how that changes things, but I'm under the impression that they're going to go with five. Of course, that's just my guess going off what they did last year. But when it comes to Ekwemenius St. Brown, really what I'm looking for at that point with a back end of the roster player is special teams contributions. Right. He has only 62 career special team snaps in 2018 and 2020. He, of course, missed all 2019. And when we look at those first four receivers, Devontae, Lazard, MVS, Amari Rodgers, they're going to get a majority of the snaps there. There's Robert Tonyan, Jay Sternberger when he returns, Mercedes Lewis, Josiah DeGuara. There's Aaron Jones out of the backfield, A.J. Dillon out of the backfield. There's only one football to go around. So when we're looking at those back end of the roster spots, it comes down to, in I guess what I'm expecting it to come down to, is special teams. And I think someone like a Malik Taylor, a Juwan Winfrey, is going to provide more special teams upside contributions than what Ekwemenius St. Brown has. Of course, that could all change. The performance is king. The true litmus test is preseason and the training camp. But where we sit right now, I see those two as more special teams contributors, bigger special teams contributors. And when it comes to those back end of the roster spots, guys who aren't going to see the field a ton, that was really the differentiator for me and why I didn't have EQ. Now to Funchess. Oh, go on.
I was just going to say I'm down with that too. And it's funny you mentioned Winfrey, because it's like, I know they brought him on, practice squad guy from Denver. You like his tape, but you don't really know much about him as far as like how he translates to the NFL, because we haven't seen much from him. But your point about teams is spot on. And I keep thinking back to EQ's quote that he gave. I mean, he gave, this is not like an anonymous scout thing. That's like, he said this into a microphone: I don't play special teams. When he was at Notre Dame, that was a quote that he had. So it's like, that's a stigma that's been with him for a while as far as his willingness or his grit or whatever you want to call it. When it comes to the dirty work you got to do on teams, that is a requirement if you are a bottom of the roster, bottom of the depth chart kind of guy, which he certainly is heading into this season. So, I mean, you're right. The rubber will meet the road at camp, and we'll see how he performs. But that I'm with you on that one. I think that's a like an uphill battle for EQ to make the roster for that very reason.
And one other decision or factor that played into that decision and why I wrote it is the salary cap. We know it's been a big thing this offseason. Over the cap has Green Bay at just over $5 million under the salary cap. But it's important to note that's just the top 51 on the roster.
Right. The rule of 51 during the offseason, for those who don't know, if you know, the 51 top contracts on the roster are what counts in the offseason. And there is a point where it flips over, and the Packers are going to be right up against it when that happens.
Yep, because they still have to sign Amari Rodgers. As we all know, there's a 52nd, 53rd play on the roster. They still have to sign a practice squad. And ideally, you have some funds available for in-season so you can sign a Tyler Irvin or a Snacks Harrison like they've done the last 2 years. Right. We don't know what's going to happen with Rodgers' contract. We don't know if a Davante Adams extension is going to free up any cap space. So I expect that they're going to do what they've done all year, which is nickel and dime. So if you can save, you know, $900,000 with EQ, $1 million with Oren Burks, $1.2 million with Josh Jackson, those are moves that they still have to make. And to get to Devin Funchess, again, it comes down to special teams. He, in a vacuum, we know he's way more talented than EQ, Malik Taylor, Juwan Winfrey as a receiver. But it'll have been 2 years come week one since he's suited up in a regular season game, 3 years since he's played a full NFL season. We don't know where he's at. How quickly is he going to shake the rust off? What kind of rapport does he have with QB1? How quickly does he pick up the Matt LaFleur offense? So there's just a lot of unknowns with him. And if he comes out and makes the roster, I won't be surprised whatsoever. I also wrote at Cheesehead TV like a month ago that he has just the widest range of where he could fall. He could become a big third down red zone threat impact player for them this season. He could also be cut, as I've alluded to as well. And he's someone up to this point who hasn't brought in or hasn't had any significant special teams experience. So again, you go through the receivers they have, the running backs, the tight ends. There's only one football to go around. You can save $1.3 million by moving on from him. So for that reason, I really think that he's on the hot seat in that regard. And just because I don't know what to expect, I guess I am leaning towards him not making the roster for really the reasons that I mentioned. But again, if he makes it, not going to be surprised whatsoever either.
All right, now we're going to cut for a second so I can reset my light. Hold on. Hold on, just 2 seconds.
Oh, no problem.
Oh yeah, that's why it's good. It ain't live. There we go. All right. So I'll just cut through it there, and then we go right here. Totally get that. Sorry, I got a power outage here for a second, but now we're back. If you look at what you wrote about Kabion Ento, it's so funny. This kid, a converted wide receiver, who I don't think the average Packers fan knows much about, mm-hmm. but I'm with you in the sense that I'm pretty excited about the possibility of his making the roster and contributing. What do you like about Kabion that has you kind of looking at him coming into camp?
So he has a very good size for the cornerback position. I think he stands about 6'2". And in both training camp years, 2019 and 2020, he really flashed, you know, as someone who's not at all the practices and always scrolling through for those updates. He's a name that you would consistently see last year. But the reason that I think he's going to make the roster is because reading the tea leaves, how the Green Bay Packers feel about him. He hurt his foot in training camp last year. Instead of putting him straight to IR, they put him on the initial 53-man roster and then IR. Why that's significant is because by going to the roster initially, it gave him the opportunity to return. He never did. I think he came to a few practices at the end of the year, but never suited up. But that, to me, speaks volumes about what the Green Bay Packers think about him. They wanted him to have the opportunity to come back and contribute. This year at OTA's minicamp, I know it's OTA's and minicamp, but he was getting, from what I saw, plenty of reps as the gunner, a very important position on special teams. So for those two reasons, and then if we look at the cornerback room, the cornerback roster, again, something that speaks volumes, Josh Jackson and Kadar Holman being healthy scratches at the end of the year. Not only did they not think that they could contribute on defense, but they couldn't contribute on special teams. And when we go through training camp, I wrote about this at Cheesehead TV, when we're looking at those back end of the roster spots and how they're going to be decided, look at who's getting the most reps at special teams. Look who's 100%. Out there with the ones, because that's going to tell us a lot. And by Green Bay not even trusting, they brought up Kavari Russell, a guy who's bounced around from different practice squads, to be on the active roster during the playoffs, to contribute on special teams because they didn't think that the other two could. So that's something else that says a lot. Again, training camp and preseason's a litmus test. But for those reasons, I think he's got a very good shot to make it. They like him.
Yeah, I think they do. And I'm with you, man. I think, like I said, I've liked those glimpses that we've seen. We haven't seen a lot. We haven't been privy to a lot publicly, but I do like what we've seen. Keeping it on the defensive side of the ball, looking at the linebacker position, I think they've got pretty much a three-way battle, right? Mm-hmm. For most likely two spots that will be played significantly as far as snap count. Probably one guy who will play, quote-unquote, the most or the central, like most likely have the headset. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you see that shaking out? Because I think Peterson's a great late addition in free agency, but we saw Barnes as a really steady presence last year, and Kamal Martin's athleticism certainly jumps off the charts if he can just kind of get himself under control. How do you see that kind of shaking out?
I'll start by taking a 30,000 foot view at the position. I really like where they are going And I'll preface this by saying I don't expect this to be an elite unit by any means. That's not what I'm saying at all. But compared to Packers linebackers units in the past, right, I like what they can offer. Barnes is capable. He's steady. Kamal Martin is just a big play waiting to happen. He almost has to like reel it in at times. And then Devondre Campbell, he's someone that I wrote about before the Packers signed him. I actually wrote about him prior to them signing Kirksey last year because I just like the well-roundedness of his game. He's not flashy in any one area in particular, but he's solid against the run. He can hold his own in coverage. He's a capable blitzer. And with his contract, $1 million signing bonus, voided years, this isn't a camp body. He's here for the long haul. Yeah,
exactly.
So, and I guess to answer your question, it really comes out to how quickly they can pick up the new Joe Barry defense. And that's one other reason I think this group can be successful. Ross Uglum of Pack Report and the Cheesehead TV draft guy did a fantastic job of breaking down the positions in Barry's defense. And when discussing the linebackers, he noted that he does a very good job of keeping them clean, giving them the opportunity to make plays. So I think that's another reason that we can see them have more success. Out of the gate, I think I like Devondre Campbell coming into camp just because of the experience, the durability. Those are still two question marks with Martin and Barnes, who both missed time last year. So as a group, those three, I really like what the Packers have compared to years past. Out of the gate, I'll go with Devondre Campbell at this point.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning that way myself. I think Barnes has got a shot. And I think Martin maybe makes his way into more playing time as the year goes on. But I'm with you on Campbell. I mean, his steady presence in Arizona is really impressive. And just the fact that he can turn his hips and cover guys out of the backfield and tight ends down the seam. I mean, it's been a while since we've seen that in Green Bay. Let's switch over to the offensive side. I think clearly you know pretty much, we talked about the wide receivers, you know pretty much how that's going to work, right? You know Davante Adams, you know Aaron Jones, you know A.J. Dillon is ascending to that running back two, maybe at times running back one spot. I think it all comes down to the offensive line, right? Because that's where the big kind of influx point is on the offensive side. Josh Myers is clearly penciled in as your starting center. How do you feel about that? Because I know we saw Corey Linsley come in all those years ago, late in the day. He didn't have like the job locked up throughout the offseason. He was literally thrown into the fire as a starter on like the Tuesday of the week of week one. So Myers has been given clearly the starting reps every single practice throughout the offseason for the most part. How do you feel about that? Because I know he played at Ohio State. I know that's a big school. I guess it won't be too big for him, but I mean, it's still a rookie on a team that has Super Bowl aspirations if Rodgers is back, and that's always the big caveat. But how do you feel about Myers stepping in there week one as the center?
Like you mentioned, there are the concerns that come with it just from him being a young player. However, here is why I would be comfortable with it because of who's going to be next to him. Assuming David Bakhtiari is healthy when that point comes. Elgton Jenkins, and I've seen some rumblings from Packers Twitter about Lucas Patrick being a potential cut candidate because they can save a couple million dollars. But we saw last year how important depth was to this offensive line unit. They had to battle so many injuries, shuffling of players, and it didn't matter who was where, who came off the bench. For the most part, this unit held up incredibly well. You look at ESPN's metric, Pro Football Focus, this was the best offensive line unit in football. So firsthand, just last year, we saw how important depth is. But I also think keeping Patrick available or on the team because of Josh Myers is huge. Having Josh Myers next to Royce Newman, having him next to even Ben Braden, I know he's 27, 28 years old, but he's primarily been a practice squad player. That makes me nervous. Not to say they can't be successful, but that makes me nervous. But I'm much, much more comfortable if – obviously, if it's going to be Jenkins and Patrick, two guys, veteran, or Jenkins isn't quite a veteran yet, but you know what I mean.
He's a veteran now. Year three, you're a veteran. At this point, especially the way we burn through players in the NFL,
Come on.
That's veteran status at this point.
All right. Come on. Two veterans right next to him on the offensive line and very capable ones. We know how good Jenkins is. Lucas Patrick, he deserves a ton of credit for what he did last year. He was very good. He was solid. At the guard position, wherever he was asked to go. So,
and his versatility too. I mean, that's the thing that makes him valuable beyond what maybe I think like, I've seen the same things you've seen. And I'm not putting that like out of the realm of possibility. Cause I do think dependent on if they have a bunch of young guys who are showing out, right? Like if these guys are just turning heads, practice in, practice out, preseason games, they come and they just dominate, then yeah, maybe Patrick gets his pink slip. But I think his versatility is invaluable in the sense of how many times do we see Corey Linsley go down with either a knee injury or a concussion or what have you that kept him out of a game for a decent stretch of time, and Patrick slid over and played center, and you didn't even know. Like, you didn't even notice until, like, a couple drives later, and, oh, wait, Patrick's in at center. I know Jenkins took over some of those duties last year, but, I mean, Patrick has shown his value in that regard. And so I'm with you. I think I understand the idea of cutting him, but I do think his value is greater than what is shown maybe on a spreadsheet when it comes to the cap hit.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, too, about just even the center depth on this team if Myers does start and gets hurt. Because, yes, we know Jenkins can play there and hold up just fine like he can anywhere. But clearly, they drafted Josh Myers. That's not the Packers' preferred position for him. So being able to have Lucas Patrick slide in there, take those snaps, valuable, incredibly valuable.
No question. Back on the defensive side, I love what you wrote about the committee at the star position. Mm-hmm. And it is funny. I am forever going to give Pete Doherty grief about everyone like glomming onto this star position moniker, because it's just a slot corner. Yep. You know, it's like, I understand, like, we all have verbiage and we all want to sound smart, but like, it's a slot corner. And it was like Brett Favre used to say, the nickel corner. Who gives a shit? You know, it's, I understand, like, that you take a linebacker or a lineman off and you put that corner out there. The thing is, though, you do need a physical presence at that slot position because you're going to be run at. The moment you go light, you're going to have offensive coordinators go, okay, are you going to be able to hold up? Who do you see? I mean, because I know I love the idea of Jair sliding in there. And we did see in this scheme last year with the Rams, Ramsey played a ton more of snaps at that star slash slot position than Jair did last year under Mike Pettine. Do you think they would risk, quote unquote? I mean, you're playing in the NFL. People are going to get hurt. You're going to get run at, whatever. But do you think they put Jair in there as much as they did, as the Rams did with Ramsey? Or do you think it will truly be spinning the wheel, so to speak, at the star position?
I think a majority of the snaps are going to be Chandon Sullivan, Darnell Savage, and Jair Alexander. We'll see Adrian Amos and probably some others sprinkled in there as well. But that's who I think a bulk of the snaps are going to. Chandon Sullivan, because he took a number of the snaps there last year. Darnell Savage, I looked at this on Pro Football Focus. His slot numbers compared to cornerbacks and safeties last year were some of the best in football in terms of yards allowed, targets, receptions, all that stuff. But to your point with Jair Alexander, I do think so. Jalen Ramsey, he went from like 60, 70 snaps in the slot prior to Brandon Staley to almost 200.
Yeah, I mean, it was off the charts. It was ridiculous.
The two big reasons were, one, he followed around the team's number one receiver more often, which just happened to take him there on occasion. But they also put him there on occasion as well just to muddy things up because he's a star player, and having a player of that caliber over the middle of the field makes things more difficult for the quarterback. So until we see otherwise, I'm going to operate under the impression that we are going to see Jair in a similar capacity to what Jalen Ramsey did last year, following guys around, maybe just there, like I said, to muddy things up. But between him, Darnell Savage, just get that man as close to the line of scrimmage as possible and let him go be Darnell Savage. Like I said, his coverage numbers were very good. Yeah, we've seen what he can do around the line of scrimmage against the run. And then I think Chandon Sullivan is going to, at the end of the season, I think he'll still have the most snaps there. But I think the other two are going to have far more than what they did in 2020.
Yeah, I very much agree with that. It's interesting because if you're Joe Barry and you're looking at this and trying to suss out who to put where, against whatever, personnel grouping the offense comes out with, blah, blah, blah. The decision you have to make about Darnell Savage is I 100% agree with you. He's amazing. He's much better. I mean, it's clear from the tape and the numbers. The closer to the line of scrimmage he gets, the better he is. However, I do think if you watch kind of the last six games of last year, he's so much more comfortable on the back end than he appeared to be earlier in the season. So I start to wonder, like, is he projecting or moving into an area where he's going to be better, maybe not as a center fielder, but just as that back deep safety. So and you love his athleticism. You love his sideline to sideline ability. So that, to me, that's where it really gets tricky, right? Because you don't want to overthink it. But at the same time, like you said, he's so clearly better towards the line of scrimmage. And then the other issue is, okay, you put him down there, right? If you are doing single high, obviously Amos is your guy. But if you put him down there, but you still want to go too high, who's the other guy opposite Amos? Are you putting you know, Sullivan back there? Are you putting Redmond back there? Who's back there? To me, that's where things, you're almost making yourself weaker by trying to play to his strengths.
I agree. And one name I'll throw out there for that too high look is Vernon Scott, coming from TCU, that Gary Patterson defense. He's very well versed in the too high, showing that he's a willing tackler playing down in the box. So that's a name
got some limited work last year, but looked good. Yeah.
Not to say that he's going to come in and take it by storm, but if Savage is in the slot, who's going to be next to Amos at this point? That's who I would look to. We'll see how it happens, though.
Makes a lot of sense. I'm talking to Paul Brettle from Cheesehead TV and Dairyland Express, the man, the myth, the legend. Before I let you go, Paul, let me ask you this, because we've talked 20 minutes now. We haven't talked about 12. I think you mentioned him in passing once. Does Roger show up next week? What do you think?
I absolutely think so. In the article you referenced, my last line was Aaron Rodgers in training camp. One sentence, he will be there. There's a lot of stuff out there. There hasn't been enough hard evidence for me to say he's not going to be. And ultimately, we all know he's a competitor. He wants to win. And this team is so incredibly well set up to win. There's nothing.
Especially for him. That's the other thing that, like, I think people don't take into account enough. It's like, no. Like, this team is built to win a championship, but it's built to win a championship with him at quarterback. Like, exactly. I can't imagine he spits in that face. I just can't.
Yeah, he missed mini camp. We all know that. But it's not like there is anything happening there that Aaron Rodgers needs to be there for.
Right.
I think he's going to be at training camp because ultimately he wants to win. And I don't know what he thinks, but I assume he knows that Green Bay is his best opportunity to do so in 2021. So I think he'll be there. He'll be here ready to win, ready to compete, and hopefully bring the Super Bowl home.
That's what I'm talking about. Lombardi going where it belongs. All right, Paul, thanks so much for stopping by, and make sure you check out Paul's work at Cheesehead TV and Dairyland Express. Thanks so much, Paul.
Appreciate it, Aaron. Thank you.